An aerodynamic welcome to all the Swissiders out there. This is the podcast that will make you faster. You will get insights about the wheel and cycling industry, but most of all, we're talking about all things aero. This podcast is hosted by the CEO of Swisside, Jean-Paul Ballard, and me, Daniel Welch. No matter where you are, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome, everyone. So this is the first episode of our Swiss Inside podcast. JP, how are you?
Oh, I'm very excited and very happy to be here. It's going to be fun.
I'm super excited too. So what are we going to talk about today? I think we will start with an overview about Swisside, about your background as a CEO of Swisside. We will cover some questions. A lot of people already asked you, but I think we will get a lot of different answers from you right now because it's just the two of us and nobody else is listening. No. So we're talking about your Formula One background, giving some insights about how the name Swisside came up. That's something really, really special and a cool story. And you started a big company 11 years ago, and we are going to talk about this also. And maybe we will get a look into the future of this podcast as well. So have you anything to add there, or is this what we're talking about?
No, it sounds good. I mean, yeah, it sounds good. Let's let loose. Talk about the background of how Swisside came to be.
Yeah, nice. So let's directly start and deep dive into your Formula One background. How does it all started?
Motorsport. I've always been crazy about motorsport, and you know, it started very young. My father was a racing driver, early in his life, and then when he got a little bit older and I think had some more money to spend, when I was a teenager, he wanted to do motor racing again. And so I had a great chance in life to be a part of that. And my job at the beginning was I had to work on the cars, and that was one of the coolest things that also helped me in my engineering career, is I learned very early on to build cars. And then later in my I also earned the chance to drive the cars, and I was pretty, that was really cool. And I was, pretty good as well. So I was able to have a bit of success and do that, let's say on a semi professional level, as well. Yeah. So that was sort of how I got into motorsport. And maybe a quick fun fact. When I started racing, Mark Webber, who is a famous former Formula One driver, he was actually my driving instructor, and that was before his Formula One career. So shows how old I am. But anyway,
but Mark Webber, the former Red Bull Racing driver,
exactly. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Renault and Benetton and Red Bull Racing, and he was pretty quick racer. So he's a cool guy and sort of was also one of those inspirational figures for me. And actually we met up in England when I first went across to get into Formula One. But maybe first about that, basically as a kid, motorsport mad, of course, then you love Formula One. So I used to watch Formula One on television.
Yeah.
I remember when I was maybe 13, 14, I started to not just be interested in the drivers and the racing, but also the people behind the scenes, the engineers. Mm. And there was a guy called Adrian Newey, who was, I think, chief designer or, I don't know, high up in Williams at the time. And, he caught my eye. And, you know, he's now one of the most famous engineers in the history of Formula One in recent years, still at Red Bull. And I remember I looked up, what did this guy study? And I think I read in an article that he'd studied aeronautics in, I think, Southampton University in England. I was like, oh, I want to do what he did. So in Australia, where I was living, that was aeronautical engineering at Sydney University. And that sort of, drove my career direction. I mean, I was lucky in that sense. I think many people don't know what they want to do when they're young. For me, it was crystal clear. I want to be an aeronautical engineer and I want to work in Formula One.
Wow, so that early. Big dreams start early. So, yeah, nice one.
So that's how it all kicked off. And then kind of to tie cycling into the picture is I always loved cycling, because it was fast. So whether it was on two wheels or four wheels, like anything that you can go fast and, you know, like on a BMX bike or a mountain bike and, you know, sliding around in the dirt and, or, you know, going really fast on a road bike. It was just, I loved it. And as an additional really important piece of information, when I was motor racing, I discovered that you had to be really fit, especially in the longer distance endurance races.
Yeah.
You could watch your lap time get slower as the race went on. And the fitter you were, the more you could maintain your lap times. Because the forces in a Formula One car, I didn't drive Formula One, in sports car racing are still huge. And it's very physical. You know, I remember doing races with a heart rate monitor and your heart rate's just sitting there on 170, 180 for an hour. Just
it's constantly. Totally crazy. I remember being a kid watching TV and watching Michael Schumacher. And there was a TV show about him. And I was always thinking as a kid, like, okay, they're sitting in the car and driving it and they have a great ability. They had good reflexes and good, like, they're strongly focused for a big amount of time. But what I learned in this documentary about Michael Schumacher was that, he was working out all the time because he has to be physically super tough to win all those races. So that's super interesting.
Absolutely. And then one person said to me, I was doing rowing at the time at school, which was also kind of got me into that real love-hate relationship with with endurance sports and pushing your body. So that was great. Someone said to me, cycling is really great for endurance. So, you know, then I really got into sort of more longer distance cycling, you know. And that really helped with racing, but I also then discovered an absolute love and passion for road cycling. And then, of course, you want to go faster, so then you get a TT bike, and then you get into triathlon, and then it just gets wild, and that's sort of where the journey spirals into the world of cycling. So, so that was kind of cool because cycling and motorsport for me were always connected. And then finally back to the F1 career kind of direction, you know. After I finished my university degree, aeronautical engineering in Sydney University, I raced for one final season, kind of full time. And I was working in parallel as a waiter and, you know, in restaurants and hotels to save money because I wanted to move to Europe to get into Formula One. And then I moved to Switzerland and moved in with my Swiss family because my mum is Swiss. So I've got a big family in the French speaking part. Worked for my cousin in a winery there, earned some good money, and then basically eventually...
Had some good wine too.
had some really good wine. And then ended up going to England and finally, you know, applied. I think I applied 50 times to, and at that stage, 10 Formula One teams over the course of a few months, and then finally got in at what was BAR Honda, which is now Mercedes Formula One. Mm-hmm. That's where my journey began, sort of a couple of years there, and then went across to Toyota Formula One in Cologne for 5 years, and then finally to BMW Sauber. Mainly always in aerodynamics and composites design positions.
Okay.
And then at Sauber, I kind of got into a special group. I was actually brought across for that from Toyota to work in what was called the complete car concept design group, where we really designed the whole car concept, and you needed... needed to know sort of everything from aerodynamics to composite design to mechanical engineering to whatever. So I had kind of a really nice background for that. And 7 years later there at Sauber, I was head of the F1 concept. That's sort of where I went, but then sort of Formula One got boring.
Why does it get boring? Because it sounds like this was your absolute passion. Like you... Yeah, like you said, you applied 50 times and you made it and you got your dream job. You worked in your dream job and discovered a lot about aerodynamics and cycling as well. And when did it get boring?
Yeah, it was funny. It was maybe like the last 2 or 3 years, the regulations were getting stricter and stricter. When I was at Toyota, for example, in the period from, when was it, 2002 to 2007, I mean, the regulations were super open. The teams had big budgets. You could innovate like crazy. You know, you could come up with crazy ideas and implement them on the car and, you know, really disrupt the whole grid. And, you know, you saw in that period that, you know, the cars with, you know, double diffusers and blown diffusers and all sorts of crazy engineering designs was just, you know, pure innovation.
So you were totally free to for innovation. You could have built like anything on the car, under the car, near the car, like and test it on the course as well. Or
I mean, yeah. So there were of course regulations, and you know, it was very strict. So you couldn't have a six-wheeled car like we've seen in the past of Formula One. You know, so there were still actually very strict rules. But within those rules and within the boxes you could work in, there was still a lot of freedom and a lot of interpretation of those rules. But then for cost cutting reasons. So in that time, for example, Toyota built two wind tunnels. So they had two wind tunnels that they were running 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and the costs were going mad. I think in 2005 it was, they spent over €1 billion to make two cars go around in circles, which is kind of a bit stupid, really, when you think about it. But there was a lot of innovation, and so that was kind of cool. But as time went on, especially after the financial crisis of 2010, they really clamped down on regulations, and you ended up just really refining and refining and refining kind of a quite fixed car. And basically not a lot of room for innovation. And I don't know, that sort of that drive to do something new and to come up with crazy new ideas sort of disappeared.
Yeah, sounds like they took away your dream job, man.
so you know, I started asking myself why invest all this time. And I remember and I have this joke quite often with my predecessor, who's still the head of concept design at the moment at Sauber. I remember I said to him, if I have to design another bloody chassis, I will shoot myself, which sounds, you know, it sounds really terrible because, like you say, it's a dream job for many people, but I just couldn't fathom the thought of just designing another chassis the same way, just with radius slightly different here or a slightly different fuel volume. I don't know. It was just, this was more of the same. And so, what was interesting is during that whole time, the cool thing about working at Sauber is, and the Swiss working culture is, there's a 1.5 hour lunch break. And they really kind of enforced that at Sauber. So it was kind of like tools down for 1.5 hours. So we would all go out cycling and, or swimming or running or whatever, because the Sauber F1 team's right in the middle of the nature at the bottom of a mountain. It's actually a sporting person's heaven.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
Perfect situation to go out and be fit. Yeah.
Totally. And so, you know, being a bunch of engineers, we were, of course, you know, looking critically at the equipment and going, yeah, this stuff doesn't look very high performance, doesn't look very aerodynamic. But, you know, we always train to question ourselves. So, you know, well, maybe the really low speed aerodynamics is different to what we do. And, you know, we kind of got it interested into cycling sort of performance. Not just aerodynamics, because, you know, weight was apparently a really big thing, but
and still everybody's talking about weight in cycling, because when you go into a shop or something and you want to buy a new bike, like the normal question is, how much does it weight? Like
totally, and like the whole thing with weight is just it's painful, because, you know, we'll come to it later in maybe this podcast or other podcasts, but, you know, the weight effect is really small compared to, say, the importance of aerodynamics. So, but anyway, we were, you know, looking at all of this, and to, you know, cut a long story short, you know, we come to the point where you realize that aerodynamics is really important. And then in the cycling industry, no one has a clue about aerodynamics. So that was sort of one of the learnings that was during the time when I was still at Sauber, and sort of, you know, got the thinking going, you know, well, what if we did something with aerodynamics and cycling, but, you know, didn't really know what. But one of the real kind of catalysts was I bought myself a really expensive set of wheels. And this was in 2009. It cost me $2,500. And I bought
pretty serious.
Serious money. And I bought them to do Tour Transalp, a big, you know, like a week long stage race, 7 day stage race. And I went out riding them, and, like, you know, they were these full carbon wheels. I won't put any brand names in there, but let's just say full carbon wheel with carbon spokes and carbon hub, all made in one piece. Yeah. And from a very reputable brand. And I went out riding, and after 30 kilometers, they delaminated and fell apart.
Oh, my God.
And I was so pissed off.
Yeah. And, 2,500 going away after 30 kilometers. Like, oh, my God.
Totally. And apart from the pain that it took me 6 months to get a replacement for that front wheel that fell apart. The main thing was, I was saying to my friends, you know, and work colleagues, like, you know, I was really worked up. I was like, how can this be? You know, this is not rocket science. It's a carbon fiber product that has a pretty limited, you know, load case. And, you know, it's not hard to engineer this product. And I was going on and on and on about it. And one of my friends said to me, well, why don't you quit complaining? Why don't you just do it? And I was like, yeah, well, maybe I will. And actually, again, one of the seeds that kind of kicked off, doing something ourselves. And probably the third seed was during that time, my really good friend George from school was, he was, you know, getting into this sort of like, he's an industrial designer, and he was getting into e-commerce. And, you know, this is back in, you know, 2010. He's like, yeah, e-commerce is the future. It's about selling online. And he's like, we should make wheels, you know, we should make wheels and sell them online. And I was like, oh, yeah, cool. Sounds like a good idea. You know, why not? You know, I was a bit naive and said, you know, let's give it a go. And so, you know, we literally did, you know, we started, you know, how can we get wheels? He'd done something with fixie bike wheels from China, but they were pretty poor quality, but he had the opportunity to test this whole kind of e-commerce thing and how we're going to do it. And he had some contacts in Asia. And so we went across to Taiwan, and that's kind of where it all kicked off. And that was during my time at Sauber. I was doing this as a side hustle. it was like 2011. And cut a long story short, in 2012, the Swiss Side brand and e-commerce business was born.
The normal story you hear from people are building companies like this, like, oh yeah, we started in a garage or something. It's like the same thing. You were out cycling with friends, and you have a good friend in online business and or in e-commerce, and then you're just talking about it, and then just started. And that's a great, I think, tip for everyone thinking about building a new company or getting ideas into the real world, is just doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I got to be clear, like, I was totally naive when I got into this. And honestly, if that was an advantage, because I didn't have the constrained thinking process of how it has to be. It was just get in there and do it. And honestly, if I knew what would be involved in doing it, I would never have done it. But because it's been a challenging journey. But yeah, and literally, like, Swiss Side started in my bedroom. Like, my kind of home office was my bedroom with my laptop in the corner for the first few years of the Swiss Side brand. And you know, then it was in my cellar. I moved to a new apartment, and we had like kind of a cellar studio thing underneath it. And, you know, that it was big enough for three desks. So it was like me and another guy and a bookkeeper. And, you know, that was the next phase, starting in the cellar. And that was probably through till 2015, and then at some point we actually got an office, and and then it sort of starts to grow from there. But
so you were building your own company besides your normal job, and then you left
August 2014. I was like, that's it. It was actually January 2014, because I had 6 months notice. I said, I'm out of here, I'm going to do Swiss Side full time. And so that's where it kind of really kicked off.
Crazy journey. And what I was always asking myself is, why did you choose wheels? What was the moment when you decided, like, okay, I'm going to do wheels?
So it was a bit of everything. So first of all, you know, like, the seed was when those wheels failed on me, and we said, you know, we can do it better. The second thing was, at least back then, you know, wheels was a one-size-fits-all product. You know, it was 28-inch, 700C wheels in rim brake. That was it. You know, it was one product, and it was fairly easy to get into. And as well, like, if you want to do bike frames, you've got, you know, multiple sizes, you've got different types of bikes, the tooling costs are huge. It gets really inhibitive. So sort of wheels seemed, say, more doable as a product. And really importantly, we knew that the wheels played a big role in the performance of the entire bike, because, of course, during our time when I was still at F1, we were doing lots of studies in terms of what brings performance on the bike. You know, if we want to go down this route, just because A, we want to make ourselves faster. and there was, you know, an internal kind of fight amongst the engineers when we're out on the bike. So everyone was always trying to make themselves faster. So there was plenty of research going down. nice. But yeah, what was clear is, you know, fast wheels really do make you faster. So it's like, okay, that's cool. That's something, you know, it kind of made sense. What probably didn't make sense is, you know, the wheel market was a super crowded market to get into. And, but again, that was sort of the naivety is, you know, I didn't really think about that. I didn't probably even know how big, how saturated that, that wheel market was. But what I did know is that wheels were totally underdeveloped in terms of aerodynamics, and that aerodynamics was the most important aspect of a wheel beyond anything. And no one was doing it properly. So it was like, okay, well, I can do that properly. And you know, structural design, that's easy. You know, we designed Formula One cars all day long, literally in those days. So, you know, I can design a wheel and a hub and, you know, build it up. And so, yeah, that was kind of where we decided to get into wheels. And then, yeah, based on the kind of the experience we made before I left Formula One. So as I said, we had this as a side hustle. The first Swiss side wheels were simple aluminium road going wheels. We had, we had the Heidi model, we had the Frank model, and we had the Matterhorn model, and we had the Saint Bernard as well. They were cool. Some of those wheels are really cool. They're real legacy wheels nowadays. But we did a lot of learning, like how do you produce a wheel in Taiwan? You know, I was in Taiwan regularly. How do you manage relationships in Asia with a really different working culture? How do you do production and then ship the wheels to Europe, get them into a warehouse, distribute them, build an e-commerce store, all of these things. So there was a lot of learning that was done in that period where at least I had another income to sort of fund the whole thing. And so you kind of, come 2014, let's say from a business model, from an e-commerce business, as well as understanding wheels and how to produce them, we'd done that, at least that initial learning. And then we were kind of ready to sort of say, we can do it properly. And I think the one thing that we realized is that in any business model and any brand, if you want to bring something new, you've got to have your unique selling point. Yeah. And of course, our USP was aerodynamics. And so it was by 2014, all that testing was done on the kind of business model and the initial wheels. It was like, we are going to bring an aerodynamic wheel. It's going to be a kick-ass wheel. It's going to be high performance. It's going to be aerodynamic. And another really important thing is going to be fair price, value for money. Because I was so pissed off at that $2,500 wheel set that ended up being just rubbish engineering. And so it was kind of like that really scarred me. It was like, okay, I'm going to shake up this industry and I'm going to bring high performance products that really bring performance, not some marketing crap. And that's a value for money product. And that was kind of, that was our USP. And that was sort of the brief for kicking off Swiss side properly with aero wheels and the first Hadron wheel in 2014.
All right, we are taking a little break right here and we will put out the second half in the end of this week. Get ready for insights about building a startup and how important the Swiss side athletes were and of course still are for the company. Thank you so much for listening and we appreciate every kind of feedback very much. Follow us on Spotify and never miss an episode. We will be on all the other platforms pretty soon. Have a fantastic week and enjoy every ride.